Hello and welcome to Artists Soar. This is a podcast for artists by three artists. We discuss all aspects of being artists, the good, the bad, and the ugly. The goal of each podcast is to provide solutions so artists can focus on their creativity and soar above. I'm Rachel Harshenko.
Jules McCullough.
Stephanie Weaver.
Art is not what you see, but what you make others see. Edgar Degas. In this episode, we're going to be talking about listener questions. And we had one question that asked, how important are titles to your work? Kristen asked that, and that's a great question, and we're going to answer that.
Kristen with a K.
So are titles that important to you guys, do you think? Or can you just put up something and say, blue piece?
When I'm not inventive, it will be in blue piece. Or yeah. floral still life number three. You
know? There you go.
Yeah. But I think, like, if it's got a story to it, then I would definitely title it around that story, because that does help explain things a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I agree. Yeah. And I, as a more of a commercial artist, I don't title a lot of my stuff.
I was wondering about that.
Yeah.
Because there's, like, you know, you got colorways 1, 2, 3, 4. And it's like,
right. Yeah, it's like a pattern. So it's like,
yeah. Now, sometimes, you know, if I do a piece with a quote, then it just becomes a quote as a title. But I'm really bad about titling my work, even if it's not like a commercial type piece, but more just, you know, I have a seagull I recently painted, but I haven't titled it. Mm-hmm.
Seagull number two.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm just,
yeah.
But I think for what I do, it's just not as important necessarily.
Yeah.
Well, it's funny because you were, like, we titled one of our favorite pieces of yours is Blueface Girl.
Right.
And she's not a Blueface Girl, but
it's a blue background, but it's not a Blueface Girl. Yeah.
Huh.
But it just stuck.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and then Sheldon, you named the seahorse Sheldon.
Yeah, because he looked like a Sheldon. He was so cute. It has nothing to do with the piece. So I don't even know how that helps.
Yeah.
Like if you're putting it in a shop, like your SEO, like, do you try, if you're putting it in your website, do you try and think SEO? Like, what would somebody search?
That's what I do. So yeah. When I mean, that's kind of, I guess you could say how I title my pieces is just based on the SEO. It's not based on anything relevant to the piece necessarily, other than, okay, this is a flamingo. There's very peri in it. Mm-hmm. It's tropical, sea life, birds, mm-hmm. you know, pink, things like that.
So that would be like pink flamingo one, pink flamingo two.
Right. I know. I have several flamingos that I've painted and none of them are titled.
Well, and back in the old days, like, you know, they would have a long title.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Like the execution of whoever and blah, blah, blah. And then the castle.
That helps because, well, it helps explain what they're thinking and what the scenario was and why the significance of the event for them. And I think, you know, in today's world, I think you guys bring up a lot of great points. You know, you've got two viewpoints. If you're thinking about doing like an exhibition mm-hmm. or selling online, then you have to name things accordingly. So for an expedition, we're not going sailing here.
Pirates of the Caribbean.
I know. See, there's a title, right?
Right.
So it explains what you're about to see. Mm-hmm. So I think the same thing with the art pieces. If you're in an exhibition, you want to explain mm-hmm. the title so you can understand the full story of the exhibition.
Right. Like what you're doing for Low Mill.
Right.
With all those pieces, I could see where those would definitely need to be titled because you're telling an entire story mm-hmm. with each piece.
No, but when I do put them on for like Etsy's prints or something like that, it's like what you're doing with your commercial licensing art, which is, you know, flamingo number two, or like I've got a cat hanging from a chandelier, and
right.
That's the title there because the title itself will be in the description because people aren't going to necessarily search for that.
So the other question is the title important for your inventory?
Yes.
Yeah. because I struggle with that with my abstract. I literally have abstract 1 through 20 and I can't tell you which one is which. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I don't know how to title them. Yeah. You know, I have one that I called abstract tree-like because it looks kind of like trees, but you know, and I know what that one is, but the rest of us like abstract 2. I couldn't tell you what abstract 2 is.
So I would probably, because most, when I think about abstracts, I don't do abstracts because I just, I can't. But when I think about abstracts, I think people, artists portraying those more as a feeling.
Yeah.
And so that maybe that would be the title for mm-hmm. that is, you know, if you're doing something red and oranges and, you know, feeling anxious, this one's called angst.
Yeah, right. No, that's a good idea. And I mean, my abstracts are a lot of line and form more than you know, I have a few that maybe look like flowers or look like trees or whatever, but yeah, I guess I, you know,
or you could do a color, you could say like abstract red, abstract
because whatever. Julie has like a massive like a whole Visio diagram type way of naming her files and adding keywords and things like that. Mm-hmm. So I imagine file structure, you probably even have things like that. Keywords added.
Well, that's where the title is so important. I try to do the keyword thing or SEO type of words for the title. So if I go searching for something, it'll get easier. But over time to find stuff.
I'm just wondering if it makes a difference to like your clientele or your customers or someone who's viewing your art in an exhibition, mm-hmm. you know, like you were saying, tell the story. But what if it is your story is for them to determine it on their own, whatever. Mm-hmm. So it might just be like red 1, red 2, red 3.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. No, there's or a lot of artists that do that.
Yeah.
Because they want them to interpret it for themselves.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And yeah. Like I'm looking at this lion picture here and it's called King of the Jungle.
Oh, I like that one.
You know, but, but then, you know, it doesn't say lion or anything in that. So if you're going to put that online, then you need to think of your SEO for it.
Right.
If someone's looking for a lion piece or black and white. Mm-hmm.
Somebody's not going to do King of the Jungle as the search term.
Right. Mm-hmm.
They're going to search for a lion. Mm-hmm. So you can add tags, I guess, in the background if you're if you're loading it into your website.
Yeah, that's mm-hmm. a good idea.
But I was just, I don't know. So I guess we're saying it is pretty important.
Yeah. And I think it's important based on who your audience is and where it's going. And I think it's okay to have, you know, like I've got a lion piece called Peace, Passion, and Power. Mm-hmm. And but when I sell it, it's the blue-eyed lion because that's what people search for mm-hmm. is blue-eyed lions.
Right.
Yeah.
They're not going to look. Who's going to look for peace, power, passion?
Right. Right. And, you know, yeah. And in different times, different things are going to come in. If you were to put peace into Google search, you're not, obviously that piece is going to have a harder time coming mm-hmm. up.
But blue-eyed lion, people find that.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I think it's kind of like you may have a going back to your point, I think, Stephanie or Rachel, having a title that tells the story. Mm-hmm. But then when you think about selling it online, where so many artists are selling now, it's more about the SEO keywording and how it relates to that title.
I can't believe we got this much out of a title discussion.
Yes, I know.
Did you ever write it on the back of it?
Yeah, I think a lot of people have.
They do.
They struggle with what to call their pieces.
Oh, I hate naming my pieces.
I do too.
I hate it.
Well, I like to add, I'll ask the question on social media, which one do you like better, A, B, C, or D, or just mm-hmm. like, name mm-hmm. this piece? Mm-hmm. And I've done that on several like Facebook groups mm-hmm. and I'll get like, you know, 20, 30 different names and people will put like little hearts and stuff next to them. And then I take the top 4 and go and say, hey, which one's now?
And then you pick the one you like.
Yeah.
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 Which I just ran across a post with a tiger asking that same question. She put 5 names down and which one would you pick?
Pretty. That one's pretty.
It's very pretty.
Oh, it's got pinks and purples and blues on the tiger.
Oh, yeah. I like that.
What are you doing over here on your computer?
I'm looking for that other question.
Oh, okay. I'm like, we're doing a podcast and she's surfing for art over here.
I was wondering about that. We've got another question. I think Stephanie has it over here.
Yeah.
What What else do we have from our listeners? Right.
So we got this one. Why are artists so underpaid?
Oh my gosh. That's a good one.
So
great question, Ken. Yeah. We're going to answer that.
Ken. Okay. So the funny thing about this is I remember like my first experience with getting paid, and I was in, I was with a buddy of mine at Redstone Arsenal, and he had like a booth there. He does artwork and he does framing and all this stuff. Anyway, he has a little framed piece of paper that says, "Don't haggle with us. We are already getting less than minimum wage."
Oh my gosh. So, yeah.
And this is like a 70 plus year old veteran who did military artwork and knows for a fact that he's already being underpaid, and he's like 70 plus years old. So this has been going on for like ever.
Right. Well, I mean, like starving artist, that's a quote for a reason.
Right.
I mean, a lot of painters, even the most famous ones we know, were not paid very much.
Oh, yeah.
Even though they're like the name in art. You know.
Well, and if you look at it too from two different perspectives, you've got art that is a luxury and you have art that is commercialized. And both are very underpaid.
Yeah,
and why is that? Yeah. Because if we didn't have the commercial art, I'm setting aside the art for that's a luxury. If you're just looking at the commercial art side of things, why are they so underpaid? Because if you didn't have those artists, you would not have a floral shirt or a turtle notebook, or everything would be black and white.
Well, I was thinking about this because the studio's at Low Mill, and we get a lot of requests for people who are needing murals or, you know, stuff for a book cover, blah, blah, blah. And, oh, it'd be great exposure. They're not offering to pay.
Right.
And they're wanting a mural to go on the side of a building. And they're like, oh, but, you know, it's great exposure.
Yeah.
I made there a t-shirt. No,
I know.
I know you did. That's awesome.
Exposure is for nudists, not artists.
Who's it really I mean, it's like a good thing for the, like in Nashville, those wings.
Yeah.
Do we know who actually did it?
Oh, no. Yeah, no.
But people, it's put on social media so much now. I mean, it's great exposure, but it's like, the Nashville wings. It's not Stephanie's wings in Nashville.
Right.
You know what I mean?
FYI, I didn't do it.
No, no. I'm just saying like, I don't know who the artist is for that. Right. I mean, like, so it's not exposure for them.
No. And I mean, let's just look at fashion, where a lot of art starts. We don't know who the artists are behind these fabric designs that are out there.
Right. But and a lot of
we do know they're very underpaid compared to the models that are modeling it or compared to the manufacturers that are manufacturing it. And why is a royalty so small?
What, like 2 to 8%
per piece.
8% being on the high end.
Yeah. Right. And very high. And you're lucky to get that.
Yeah. And that's assuming you probably have an agent, and an agent takes 15% of whatever that is.
15%.
Yeah.
So there you go.
Right. So I mean, that's an argument for the side of these artists should be being paid more because we're selling to the general public for something that is quote unquote needed. It's not necessarily a luxury item. We need clothing on our back so we're not running around naked. Do we need it to be patterned? Of course not. It could be black and white, but who wants to live in a boring black and white world? Like that just reminds me of the movie Divergent series or the book series Divergent. But now you talk about luxury art. To me, you're paying somebody for something that you love. And that is, I mean, Stephanie, you can talk more about this than anything, but it is what it is worth to you as the buyer. And the artist, if the artist doesn't feel like it's worth $100 and it's worth $10,000, that's what it's worth. That's the time it took to put that to piece. I mean, Stephanie has some very complicated, long running pieces that are definitely worth more than what she's even selling them for.
Right.
Well, so kind of going back to the question about, you know, why are artists underpaid? It's two-factor if we kind of look at things. One is we're doing it to ourselves.
Yes.
We're not charging what we should be charging.
Mm-hmm. And we're not negotiating what we should be negotiating.
Right.
And I think people are taking advantage of that.
Yeah. And the fact that there's so many artists out there that are trying to do this, mm-hmm. there's not, I don't think we have this natural selection mm-hmm. of, sorry, I probably need to get up closer. I don't think we necessarily have the natural selection to weed out the ones that aren't necessarily
good.
Yeah. I don't know how else to say it, but I mean, not everybody is going to be licensed. Not everybody is mm-hmm. going to be a fine artist.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not to say that you're not an artist.
Right.
It's just saying that you're commercially not going to sell in that sector. Mm-hmm. Is that kind of a nice way of saying
it? Yeah. I mean, I think okay. that's true because I don't think, I mean,
and
art can be learned. It's not necessarily talent.
It's definitely a skill.
It's definitely a skill. Mm-hmm. There are some, just like there's some math wizards out there. You know, my husband and my son can calculate these complicated math problems in their head in about 2 seconds flat. I can't do that.
Mm-hmm.
That's a talent, but I could learn the skill to do that. And I think art is the same way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, obviously there's definitely talent, naturally mm-hmm. born talent out there, but it is definitely a skill and it's a learned skill.
Mm-hmm.
And
well, like I think, I think that a lot of artists, a lot of artists feel like they sell cheap. So like if you're going through like yes. an art and craft show, mm-hmm. it's like an 8x10 is like $15 or you know, $10 or whatever. And you're like, if it's an original.
Now I'm way down.
Yeah.
But I think that's also based on like the skill level. So if they were to use the art pricing calculator, and yes, I'm going to do a shameless plug here.
Mm-hmm. Well, you should, because it's a really good.
It's a good tool.
Yes. It's a very great tool.
Thank you. Well, the art pricing calculator takes into effect your skill level, which is the number of years you've been an experienced artist, mm-hmm. and then how many hours, and uses Department of Labor information to determine how much you should actually be charging based on all your skill level. So like when you walk through Little Mill, you're going to see a variety of prices.
Mm-hmm.
And so, and that's good because not everybody can afford the high end price. Mm-hmm. And those artists that are just getting started, it's validation that they should keep going to get paid that lower price. That doesn't necessarily mean that that's where they need to stay for the rest of their lives. They don't need mm-hmm. to ask mm-hmm. for $100 for an 8x10 for the rest of their lives. That's their starting point. And I think that's where a lot of artists kind of get stuck is when they say, okay, this year I'm an 8x10, it's $100. Next year, 8x10, $100. Next year, $200. And then they've got clients that are saying, oh, that's too much. Then they have that idea that it's not of value and they devalue themselves. The truth of it is yes, they probably are at a $200 value. They just go into the wrong marketplace now. And if they don't use a tool like the art pricing calculator, then they're devaluing in their mind and using these feelings
mm-hmm.
that don't necessarily relate to the art world.
So do you think,
because makes sense.
Okay.
Do you think that artists are underpaid because people don't value what they see for the most part? I mean,
I think it's twofold. Like, I think people sometimes don't value.
Mm-hmm.
And then guess what? They're not your audience. So,
right.
And then I think the artists also undervalue. And then we've got the commercial aspect where the licensing agents are sometimes taking advantage
mm-hmm.
and the manufacturers are taking advantage.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think too, I think another reason why artists are underpaid are one, they're given this stereotype that they're not knowledgeable enough to understand how to pay themselves appropriately.
Oh, yeah. Very good.
You know,
yeah.
There are many artists out there that I know, you know, young kids as well as older people that was their skill was art and mm-hmm. they were devalued as youngsters.
It's
and
true.
So they don't find value in what they're doing. So they price their stuff really low, but they have this unbelievable, amazing talent
mm-hmm.
that should, even with, you know, 2 years experience, should be at a master level.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that, but also I think there's no standardized pricing. There's no standard organization. The closest thing you can come to it is the Graphic Artists Guild mm-hmm. for pricing artwork. Mm-hmm. And
even that's not, doesn't take into effect a lot of the things you have
right,
in your
right.
pricing.
Exactly. Because a lot of that gathering is from surveys of information out there from artists.
Right.
And I think those are two more reasons why people or why artists are not pricing their work correctly and getting underpaid. It really, unfortunately, I think it comes back to the artists yeah. not doing the research and knowledge to get it. And I get it. A lot of them are not right-brained. Is the analytical side?
Left brain
is the analytical side, right brain. Yeah, I just don't, I mean, they sway more to one side than the other, and so they don't do that research.
Well, and the other thing is, do you think that the market, our marketplace right now adds to that? So they're like, oh, you can go down to Walmart and get a piece to go over your sofa, and it's only going to be $35.
Right.
Why should I give you $1,200?
And yeah. and that you artist know what I mean? That painted like, that is getting a 2% royalty.
Right.
Minus the cut of the art agent, probably.
Right. Right.
Because they didn't know how to negotiate their contract appropriately.
Well, so, and, you know, you got places. Hobby Lobby and Michaels yeah. and you mm-hmm. got all these places that have like inexpensive art.
Yeah.
And it's not horrible.
No.
It's good. It's really cute.
Yeah.
I mean, they got licensed for a reason.
Right.
There was a marketplace exactly. for it. But yeah, to Julie's point, they're getting significantly underpaid, like the 2%. Mm-hmm. And is that, you know, I hear some of these licensing contracts that are, you know, you're going to get paid once a quarter. And here's your... it's not like they buy the number of units. Majority of them don't buy the number of units up front. And then they just say, okay, however many we sell, that's your percentage.
Right.
And so it's not necessarily a guaranteed income of even that 2%.
Right.
And then some of those manufacturers will ask for, what's it called? Exclusive rights. Mm-hmm. So now the artist doesn't even have the ability to take that piece to somebody else and shop around to get a higher price.
Right.
I know. It's just... I think that there's like this kind of a vicious cycle.
Right.
Because artists are like, oh, I want to be found at Home Goods and I want to be in, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. Michaels and I want to be. And then you're like, oh, I'm only getting 2%. And the yeah. artwork well, is.
Oh, sorry. I was just going to say there too, real quick, though, when you're commercially art, you're selling on volume.
Right.
So, yes, it's going to be less. Mm-hmm. It's going to be, you know, less for Home Goods than it is going to be your down the street boutique mm-hmm. from a royalty standpoint, right, because right. your down the street boutique isn't going to guarantee X amount where, right. Right. you know.
Down the street boutique is going to not necessarily buy in bulk from you or wholesale even from you. They'll do right. commission based.
Right.
So they'll take, right. like, I just got into a store here. Mm-hmm. I take my artwork tomorrow and they're going to take 50%. So if I didn't have my artwork marked appropriately, then I would be negative in mm-hmm. my numbers for, mm-hmm. so I'm an art price calculator man, but then like, and I submitted my artwork for a show in Paris, Tennessee, where they're going to take 50%. And I submitted the owl piece with the moon. And for that one, it's like $9,232. I don't know. I use art yeah. pricing calculator. Right. Mm-hmm. And had I not priced it appropriately, I would get screwed in the shipping. I would get screwed in all the artwork that actually art and the ideas, the original idea that came from that is in a dream. And so, I mean, you really, it's up to the artist to stand by their guns. There's a book. Oh God, I got so many things on this. So there's a book that I know Julie and I've read. He's an FBI negotiator.
Oh, the,
Negotiate like your life depends
yes,
on it.
Yes, that's it.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So that's a really like must read book. If you're going to get into contracts and these types of things, you got to really understand what is negotiable on your contracts, because everything is fluid, but you have to be willing to walk away.
Yes.
And that, yep. I mean, we started practicing that even with cars. There was a car that I wanted when I was in Atlanta. And I was like, okay, so I know the asking price is this. Here's how much I know they actually paid for it. And I'm going to go $500 over what they paid for it.
Yeah.
And Ben's like, well, you got to be prepared to walk away. And I said, it's a car. is going to get me from point A to point B. Mm-hmm. And we negotiated for 6 hours. I've got my damn car. We closed them down that night.
Oh,
yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, it's funny you say that because we just got a price from the guy that mowed our lawn last year. He went up $20. And it's probably because he's no longer high school students. He's running a real business. So he's got insurance now, probably. We're guessing these things. My husband's doing it. And I'm like, you need to negotiate it.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. He's right down the street from us. So he shouldn't have to go up in the gas that much. Mm-hmm. You know, go for $5 or $7 higher than it was last year. Yes, he should get more money now. Mm-hmm. And I think he was too cheap last year. He was a high school student.
Yeah.
So negotiate somewhere in the middle there. Go back to him. Don't just tell him no. Go back to him.
Well, and the funny thing is my dad, he's negotiating with a lawn care service now. And they live down the street type thing. And they came in too low. And dad's like, let's start out at this price. And he actually, my dad raised the price because he knows the value.
Yeah.
And I think that's part of it is like
knowing the value.
Knowing the value.
Right.
I think that's key. And it, like you were saying with that, the guy that was out there on Redstone, you know, don't negotiate. You know, I'm already underpaid.
Yeah, I'm already underpaid. And he would have people in there and they would say, oh, I'll give you like $50 for this. And that's how much the frame costs. You can get out of my booth. And he was rude. But he's like a 70-year-old veteran guy. He can do whatever he wants. And but the other thing I was going to tell you guys, there when I was doing my research on the art pricing calculator, I started looking back into actors. So actors back in the early 1900s when, you know, the film just kind of really started and it was, you know, they didn't even have voiceover things.
Right.
None of that. Those actors got paid like pennies. Mm-hmm. But who got the money were the agents, directors, and everybody else. Mm-hmm. Then they developed
the studios,
Actors Guild.
Yeah. Then they developed the Actors Guild, and then everything became unionized. You had to join the union in order to even get an acting job. And that was something that I was like, well, I wonder if this is something that we need to start to protect ourselves. But because even our agents are not necessarily our best, and same with actors, they're not necessarily their best advocates.
Right.
You are your own advocate.
Are your own advocate. So if you're getting underpaid, honey, that's on you.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. And I mean, and what you get paid, it's like, you know, you can be, there's Walmart, Target, Nordstrom's, and you know, and I think there's one higher than Nordstrom of Bloomington's.
Bloomingdale's.
Yeah, Bloomingdale's. That's it.
We don't go there.
I know. Even Nordstrom's, you know, it's like, I can remember going to Chicago and just walking around the store because it was so cool to be in there.
Yeah.
But, you know, you've got these different levels of shops for a reason. You've got your different levels of artists.
Yeah.
So where do you value yourself? Where do you see yourself?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And are you a volume artist or are you a fine artist? Mm-hmm. You know, and I think there's a difference between the two.
So these have been two great questions that we had for our episode. If you guys have any more questions for us, let us know. We'll be happy to answer them and we'll put it on our next podcast. Until next time.
Thanks for listening to Artists Soar,
a podcast for artists by artists. And if you have any questions, feel free to email us at hello@artistsoar.com.
And be sure to leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts so that you can get more of us and we can bring in some sponsors to help you and help us.